Inside Lacrosse Podcast.
Welcome to the latest edition of the In the Crease podcast. I am your co-host, Dan Abern, contributing writer at Inside Lacrosse, joined by my esteemed colleague.
I'm Kyle Devin. I'm the Gear and Lifestyle editor. Dan is being subdued on purpose because he's about to explode. Go ahead, Dan.
Man, I'm not even going to explode. I just got four words for you, Kyle. Drought is over. It was a long time coming. The Terps finally got it done. 42 years of pain down the drain.
Yes, that happened. I was there. And I think you're downplaying this because you were very excited.
Yeah, I was excited. Yeah.
Yeah.
So if we're being honest, like, about 5 minutes ago in the game, still was not 100% confident that we were going to pull it away just because the way things have gone past couple of years. But looking back, I never should have been in doubt. I knew we were going to win when we went three up because it's just like, all right, now it's real. And, I texted my dad. I think he was really excited. And when it actually happened, I got choked up a little bit. But after that, it was just kind of numb and kind of emotionless. Maybe I was just kind of trying to take it all in the moment, but I was not as excited, obviously, as the players. Maybe we'll talk about this later in the podcast, but it was just, it was a good feeling. I think it was more of a sense of relief than anything else. We finally got it done.
I'm really happy for you guys. You did a great job. You proved all the quote unquote haters wrong, which I wasn't aware of this, but I became a Maryland hater at some point when really I don't actually hate the Maryland team at all. I was just playing it up to make fun of you, which the most fun part of the podcast for me all season.
So, yeah, I was hanging around the locker room after the game, and I had a few managers, players. Tell Kyle about this. They were all mad.
So what you're saying is everyone in Maryland hates me.
Maybe. You're a hater, Kyle. Hate.
Oh, no. What will I do? An entire lacrosse team hates me. Oh, been there, done that, wrote the book. Also, the only people that think I hate Maryland think that because of how much I have roasted you for being a Maryland alum and being, like, in the heart of Maryland. Like, if any of them read my articles, they would never think that. Yeah. But, like, I understand because reading is, like, hard.
Yeah, man, such a Maryland homer. They only had the national champion in men's Division I, women's Division I, men's Division III, and high school.
But not D2.
That's because I don't think there's a D2 school in Maryland. I'll have to fact check that one. Kyle, let's get into this game. Maryland Terrapins are Division I men's lacrosse national champions for the first time in 42 years. Let's talk about most outstanding player. It went to Tim Muller, largely for shutting down Connor Fields, Connor Canizzaro, and then Trey LeClaire in the three consecutive games. However, in my opinion, you got to give it to John Guarino, the number two faceoff guy on this team. He finished, I believe, at 72% draws in the tournament. He foiled T.D. Earland, Trevor Baptiste, and Jake Withers in three consecutive games. They're all-Americans. It's just an incredible run. It's almost like you're going to hate me for this, but the Joe Flacco Super Bowl run where he beat Luck, Manning, and Brady and then won the Super Bowl.
This is my blank stare. I think Muller was very deserving. I don't know if he shut down Connor Fields, and we'll get to Connor Fields later down in the podcast, but he was the best defender the entire weekend. And I think personally, we're shifting towards another part of the season now for me, which is the MLL, professional outdoor lacrosse. I think Tim Muller is going to be a great MLL player. And I think he has a chance to start right away for, the team that drafted him, which is Florida. And they're going to be super fun to watch all summer because they drafted Dylan Molloy, Sergio Saucedo, and Nick Mariano. And to go with Muller on the defensive end, they drafted Jared Newman, the most underrated defender, you know, in the nation, and Alec Tullett. So, I mean, he's a great defender. I think he's going to lead that defense to the next level. And, you know, I am actually looking forward to watching Florida games for the first time in, like, ever.
Yeah, but one thing we can't mention without John Guarino is just really the overall effort from Maryland's. They call themselves the Hog Pen. Shout out the Hogs. But they're led by their fearless leader, C.J. Mattis. He deserves a ton of credit. You know, when he came in last year, you could clearly see that this team just took off with faceoffs. They had a guy, you know, Austin Henningsen, who was a freshman, who had an amazing year, you know, kind of exceeded everybody's expectations. And then this year, you know, it was a lackluster year during the regular season at the Faceoff X, and then they had their best performances of the year in the three games that mattered most.
Is it too early to anoint C.J. Mattis the best volunteer assistant in NCAA history after this win?
I don't think it is.
Can we get him on Dancing with the Stars?
I think we might have to work that out. He's got, I bet he's got moves too.
Yeah, he's a good looking man. You got to get him on TV.
But you know, really the faceoffs were just, you know, one part of just, I thought, total execution from Maryland really throughout the whole tournament. When you talk about Albany, then Denver, and then Ohio State, one thing I was really impressed with was, even though some of those games were close, the Albany game was not, Maryland kind of came with a total victory. Like, you know, Quinn Kesnick said before the national championship game that if Maryland was going to win today, they would have to get a complete effort from everybody on the roster. And I feel like those three games, they executed so well on every part of the field, faceoffs, defense, offense, and goalie play.
Yeah, I don't disagree at all. I think, you know, say what you will about Maryland's style of play, and I'm sure we'll get to that later on, which is, you know, if I'm going to be negative about Maryland, which if for real, I don't like the slowdown where they play. But the fact that they were able to put together this effort defensively, I actually voted for Dan Morris as the MVP because he came up huge in this game, turned away key Ohio State opportunities, and like stood tall in those pipes, man. Like the tradition of Maryland goalies, you know, coming up big is storied and great, especially for the last, like, I don't know what, 8-10 years. We've had great goalies come all the way through the Maryland program and, you know, not necessarily translate all the time at the next level, but still make it to the next level at least and do a great job. So, you know, Dan Morris Jr. returning next year as a senior, I think he's going to be a great leader for the team going forward.
Yes. And another, you know, I thought, you know, underrated guy on this team who's had such a great year and probably had his best game in the championship game was Curtis Corley, who had a little bit of an interesting matchup against Jack Jasinski, kind of putting a big guy, big, strong guy, and him and Curtis Corley against Jack Jasinski, who's the, you know, the low man from Alabama who's got quicks. And I just thought he was outstanding. And really, you know, his performance, and then you go to Bryce Young, it never seemed like Fennell got topside against him. And then, of course, Tim Muller took away LeClaire for the most part until late in the game.
I think defensively, Maryland did a great job. Ohio State didn't really, you know, go back to the well with some of the stuff that was successful against Towson on Saturday. I don't know why they didn't go back to isolation wing dodges. That's basically what won them the game against Towson late. I thought they threw everything else at the Terps, the Pairs offense, you know, spreading guys out, trying to go put Jasinski one-on-one behind the cage. And I just thought that Maryland was more than ready to answer what they had. They looked, you know, I read a tweet by Ken Stockman, who was like, Tillman, like, guarding that iPad like his browser history was still on it after the game. Like, there was so much in that iPad, and they like, went back to it a bunch for shots on the sideline. They were prepped, man. I'm sure they had terabytes of data. They're just pouring through on Ohio State, just getting ready for that game.
Yeah, I just thought throughout the game, Maryland's slide packages were on point. There was – I can't really remember the exact moment. It was probably in the second half where, you know, Ohio State had clearly caused a defensive breakdown for Maryland. But then they executed, you know, they had the first slide, and then they had the second slide. And then you could see – I don't know who it was, but he was going towards Cage, and that third slide came, and it just squashed any chance for Ohio State to get a goal. Such a poised moment for that Maryland defense. And offensively, you know, you could somewhat tell that Rambo and Heacock were probably going to be quiet in this game, given how well, Ben Randall and Eric Evans have played during this tournament. So credit to the other guys on that offense who stepped up. Dylan Maltz, he had a tremendous game dodging, I thought. And then Rotanz was fantastic, as he has been throughout this postseason. And then Adam DeMillo coming up huge as the unlikely hero. That's awesome. You know, we're going to talk about this right now, but the Terps were wholly deliberate in wasting clock, taking possession shots. And, you know, I told Christian Sweezy, who I was watching the game with at Gillette Stadium, said, their biggest enemy right now is the clock. You know, if we go back to that national championship game against North Carolina last year, Eamon McEnany goes on the broadcast and says, this is the point in time where Maryland, you know, starts to take possession shots and work clock. And I believe they were up by two at that point. And then you actually see Maryland not take a possession shot. I think the shot either gets saved by Brian Balcom or goes wide and there's no backup. And then on the next two possessions for Carolina, they score and tie the game. And after that, it was over. So I think they took, you know, they learned their lesson last year. You know, with the lead in the title game, there's no reason to press offensively until the refs tell you to or you get that slam dunk. But of course, you know, one of the things that we're going to hear plenty of conversations about in the next week is, should there be a shot clock in men's lacrosse because of this game? I mean, you go back to 2011, Maryland's 6-5 overtime victory against Syracuse. That was the game that basically said, all right, we need something, and they came up with the stall warning and subsequent shot clock.
Yeah, somebody on the inside of the cross staff might have already written that article about needing a shot clock, and it might be me. It is me. Six stall warnings in the fourth quarter. Here's the thing about if we're going to really dive into this game, though, and we're going to have this be a complaint. Does Maryland win the game with a shot clock? It's a rhetorical question. Hell yes. They win that game with a shot clock anyway. The Buckeye offense wasn't getting quality looks. The defense was on point. You know, they weren't finishing their opportunities. And Maryland was. And the thing that I think drives, you know, even hardcore and casual fans crazy is they see all this talent, all this athleticism, and so many chances get, like, crushed because teams are so intent on getting their ride set, subbing correctly, being able to stop one side of the field, shutting down the best player. And that's good. Like, tactically, lacrosse should be at a point where that's what we're doing. I mean, we've seen the specialization of things like the long stick midfielder position has evolved into a guy that can carry the ball and shoot. We've seen the faceoff position, you know, get its own coach on a championship team. I think that looking forward, I don't know if it's that game is the best argument for a shot clock, but it's definitely in a conversation about it. You know, I feel like, you know, my biggest gripe was, and my biggest gripe with this, people keep calling this 30-second thing a shot clock. It's not a shot clock. It's a stall clock. It's a stall clock. It's all up to the referee's, like, interpretation of the situation. That's the problem. Because refs suck. And they get stuff wrong, and they're human. Okay, maybe they don't – not all of them are terrible. But they get stuff wrong. You know, they get stuff wrong. Yes, they got the dive rule interpretation correct, you know, in the semifinal with Maryland and Denver, back-to-back dive shots. Yes. They could have easily gone the other way because of human error. Making the shot clock human error puts it up to interpretation, which puts the game in the referee's hands. What other sport – does the referee have the game in their hands? I actually have an answer for this, but in your opinion, what other sport does the referee totally control the action that you can think of?
I would say soccer would be my first guess, but I'm not entirely sure on that.
It's not a bad offering. I think rugby is actually controlled by the ref because they're, you know, putting the positioning and they're getting everything right. Football to a certain extent, but not to this extent. Not to the extent where it determines the length of possessions. And I think that we're at a point where we just need to take it out of the ref's hands. And if you want, I don't even care how long the clock is, but there has to be a clock now. You know, there has to be a clock. I think there's a lot of people that have all their variations or whatever. If I'm going to go with my personal variation, I think it should be very close to MLL. But unlike MLL, I don't think the clock should start right when the other team gets possession. I think it should start when you touch it in. 60 seconds, touch the ball in. That's it. not cross the half line because it's too much. The rep, like putting possession on and showing when you touch the ball in is something that people are already used to. And you're putting a little bit on the ref, but like all he has to do is like look at the line and see if the ball goes over the line. Which, by the way, they messed up in this game too.
I think you're right, though. I think Maryland does win that game with a shot clock. I just felt like they chose not to play that style because they had the ball so much, and that kind of leads me to my next point. Maryland just was so clinical off the ground in this game. And I was talking with a few Maryland alumni after the game, you know, former players who were probably playing in Major League Lacrosse right now, and they were telling me that it seemed like every ball bounced Maryland's way, and that really felt true in this game. But, you know, it also was a function of the Terps just being animals when the ball was on the floor. Like, I can't even tell you how many countless plays they made in the middle of the field where they got the ball on the turf and they got it in their sticks and they got it on the other end. Like, I remember there was one point in the game where Tom Carey made a save, and I think the ball like deflected to his left out of the crease, and he went to go get it, and the Maryland had two guys ready to go on him, chase him down, cause the turnover, and you know Carey has to retreat to his cage, and he gets back in, and he smashes his stick against the side of the pipe. He was so angry, and it's just like that is, you know, the microcosm of this entire game is that Maryland is just getting every ground ball. I believe it was 9-3 ground balls in that crucial second quarter when it went from 2-2 to 5-2 for Maryland. So honestly, if there's one thing along with the way faceoffs panned out that determined the victory in this game, it was the ground ball play.
Yeah, I think that really frustrated Ohio State as well. It looked, you know, up in the press box, you can see the sideline just as clear as you can see the rest of the field. Maryland's jumping up and down the whole time. Ohio State, very like hands to the side, fists clenched. You know, things weren't going their way, man. And that happens. And some of the things that they couldn't control, you know, like the bounces. I mean, I'm not saying luck was any part of this game at all for Maryland, because they definitely were the better team on the day, 1,000,000%. I'm just saying that Ohio State was visibly frustrated by the lack of luck that they didn't get. You know, they didn't get bounces. They didn't, quote unquote, get calls. I don't think. You know, and I think that definitely had a big effect on what they were doing and put more pressure on them as the game went on to keep coming back. I think it was too much pressure on Withers, who is a guy who is a 50-50 faceoff guy. Like, he creates chaos by not necessarily winning the draw clean, but by, you know, jamming up the other guy and getting the ball out to his wings to do work. And I think that once you took that away from Ohio State, you took away that kind of chaos and Maryland's, you know, order took over the game. I feel like it was pretty much over at that point. And I think that point might have been like a couple minutes into the third quarter after they scored about 2 minutes in.
Yeah, I think I tweeted at halftime during the game that the first to the clamp, it really didn't matter because, you know, both guys were just holding the other team up until they made it a 3-on-3 battle. And I really did think that Maryland's wings just had a tremendous day. I mean, Matt Neufeldt probably... he's one of many unsung heroes for Maryland whose praises just don't get enough, but I think he had 6 ground balls in this game, just pretty much just playing off the wing. And he's really been, you know, a quiet, you know, excellent guy for this team the whole year with the way that he just gets the ball on the turf in that 3-on-3 battle, gets the ball and gets it to their offense. And you're kind of right, because of the possession time, the way Maryland defended, there was never a run from Ohio State until, you know, in the final quarter of the game, late in the game, when they're hustling to get back. And I was telling Sweezy, who I was sitting next to, I was like, Maryland just has to pop the balloon, if you know what I'm saying. They have to take the air out of Ohio State. And it kind of felt like just every single one of those little ground ball battles where they came away with it just kind of kept poking at the balloon. And then by the end of the game, that third goal to go up 9-6 at the end of the game, that was when they popped the balloon. That's when I felt, like I said, when I felt, okay, we might actually win this thing. Yeah, right. I never felt like the Buckeyes established a rhythm offensively after their second goal of the game, which was in the first quarter. You know, it's not that they aren't a dangerous team and they can't come back. It just kind of felt like they never grabbed serious momentum throughout the game. You got to credit Maryland for that.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say the moment was too much for them either. I thought they still showed out and they never gave up. You know, they had to rely on some some wing play to get them the ball. They had to rely on Withers to pop one out and go one-on-one and score to get, you know, the fire started. It was just a little too late. I don't know what would have happened if we're playing five quarters. You know what I mean? I feel like Ohio did have the momentum going in before that empty net goal. But, you know, it's just a matter of bleeding the clock and controlling the tempo. And, you know, that's what got Maryland here. That's what got Maryland to the last two championship games, too. And you can hate that or like it or appreciate it. But at the end of the day, the trophy is theirs. You can't take it away from them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it's not like they didn't play, you know, out of bounds of the rules. They played within the rules and basically said, we're going to take whatever, you know, the officiating gives us. Kyle, before we move on to the Ohio State side of things, let's give a shout out to our sponsor, Sideline Swap. Sideline Swap is where lacrosse players buy and sell their gear. Find deals up to 70% off on heads, shafts, helmets, and more, or snag unique gear from colleges and the pros. Sideline Swap also lets you sell old gear simply and securely. List in seconds, and they'll send you a prepaid shipping label when it sells. Visit sidelineswap.com today to get started. That's sideline, SWAP.com. You know, as much as I'm overjoyed that Maryland won, you know, I definitely feel for Ohio State. You know, I watched them a lot this year because I watched the Big Ten so intensely. This was a really good team. You know, I thought a very influential senior class in that locker room leading this team. I definitely feel for Ohio State. They such a lovable team with the silly bleach blonde haircuts, the exceptional backstories of players like, you know, Eric Fennell, Jake Withers, Jack Jasinski. You know, such a very much of an underdog roster. You know, I wrote about that before their Final Four appearance. You know, I really do think that they were up there as one of the best teams in Division One, and I think they were very worthy of being in the national championship game.
I enjoyed all the Big Ten haters shutting their mouths. That was fun. Yeah. That was fun to see two Big Ten teams in the championship. But I have a question for you.
Okay.
Where's the attendance chirp? Did we show up or did we show up?
I'm like, yeah, you guys showed up. So here's a funny little anecdote from being in the press box. I didn't sit with you. I sat with Sweezy in a different section of the Gillette Stadium press box. And I saw the attendance, you know, tweets coming in. And I think it was 28,000, you said?
Yes.
Yeah, 28,000. But basically, I was like, that seems low. But then I start seeing the tweets come in saying, oh, this set, you know, the highest attendance since such and such year. And then people start chiming in on Twitter like, dang it, New England actually showed out. We're going to have to go back to Gillette Stadium, aren't we?
So you already had to go back. You already had to. You already got to come back.
Yeah, all these people from Maryland, like, darn it. New England showed out again. Now they're going to make Gillette a regular fixture every couple of years. So, yes, Kyle, you guys showed up. New England showed up.
I mean, Sunday was also the record day. And we didn't just show up for men's games. We showed up for women's games and D2 and D3. So anyone that wants to, you know, I got my hand to my ear. I don't really hear anything coming from the peanut gallery right now. But yeah, I'm happy it turned out that way. Obviously I had nothing to do with it. I'm just happy everyone came. You know what I mean? So what is your opinion on the weekend as a whole? How was the experience, not just the championship? What was your experience in New England like?
What specifically do you want me to tell you? Like, I feel like
I don't want you to tell me anything. I'm just genuinely curious.
Well, I'm sure one thing, if you followed people in the press box, you know, the food was not great in Gillette. We were a little, that's such like a, such a journalist kind of quip, like, oh man, the food stink, but yeah, you know.
It was great Friday when they actually catered it, and then they didn't cater it the rest of the weekend. So I don't know whose fault it is, but obviously I'm upset about that too. Like, but overall, more upsetting was that every time I went down to get coffee, it was gone.
Yeah.
Which I'm glad there wasn't a homicide, but like, it could have happened. You have that many journalists, like half of us hate each other. The other half of us are like best friends. Like someone could have gotten hurt if you don't have coffee. That's all I'm saying. Like, figure it out. You messed up.
But the weekend was fun. I don't know if I necessarily had more fun than I did, you know, at Philadelphia. Cause I just feel like being in Foxborough, it's just not as exciting as being in downtown Philadelphia and, you know, taking a quick drive down the highway to the stadium. We stayed in kind of the suburbs of Boston and had like a 15 to 20 minute drive to Foxborough. But overall, I thought, you know, the package of having the women's plus all levels of Division 1, 2, and 3 play their title games and the Final Four for Division 1 within the same weekend. Actually, you know, I kind of had a bad feeling about it going into it because I said, hey, look at the lines on Friday. Like, is that going to cause a distraction for casual viewers? I don't know about that, but I felt like it didn't really matter for me, you know, watching the game. I felt like it was a stunning success to have all three of the divisions plus the women's tournament in the same building, and it certainly showed with the result on Sunday. I believe 31,000 people, you know, came to Gillette Stadium in total during that. So that's about 10,000 people per game. I thought that was excellent.
Yeah, it's a great attendance. It is hard to get to. I mean, but there's nowhere else you could play it up here if you were going to play it up here. And yeah. The great thing about Philly is, like, you're right next to Philly. You know, you're right next to, like, all these things. You're a T right away, or what do they call the train in Philly?
I don't know.
Metro. You're just a train right away. And that's not true up here. And people still came. So I was happy with that. I saw tons of people everywhere. And a lot of people, you know, texting and being like, are you there? Are you there? Like, it's very exciting. Like, I think a lot of people here, if they couldn't make it, watched it. And I think that's all that matters. If we're going to grow and go forward with lacrosse as trying to make it into more than just like a third tier sport, you know, we need more people to watch the game and come to the championship. So, you know, I think it's great. I think it was great to have Merrimack in the D2 championship, even though they didn't manage to pull it out against Limestone. I thought a lot of them showed up and stayed. A lot of those people from kind of you're saying Boston suburbs, not really. Like we stayed in like Dedham, which is like not a Boston suburb, but okay. It's a little farther away. It's much closer to like the stadium than Boston is. But you know, I would say that Merrimack is more of a suburb of Boston than where we are. But semantics, regardless, I'm happy everyone came. People seem to have a really good time. The added stress of the MLL draft, again, I'm super surprised no one got hurt. I am.
Yeah. Quick aside before we got to go back to Maryland. Patriot Place is one of the strangest places I think I've ever been. So after the MLL draft, I'm walking to the women's game, and like I'm walking through Patriot Place because it was at Toby Keith's restaurant in Patriot's Place, walking back to the stadium, and I just, you know, see people going to lunch, going to yoga class, going to a movie. It's just like, dude, there is like a super high profile sporting event going on right behind you. And like people were going to like bar class and stuff. It's like such a weird feeling.
I mean, I have no retort or defense for that, but that's just part of life, you know?
Yeah, it's truly like an epicenter of just stuff to do in that part of Massachusetts. All right, Kyle, let's get back to the legacy of this Maryland team. I think they are truly worthy champions. You know, we said before the tournament that whoever wins this tournament, considering how talented and deep the field is a truly worthy champion. And you got to say that Maryland had a pretty tough road. They had, of course, they started, you know, with Bryant. Then they went to Albany, you know, and I think a lot of people said whoever wins the Albany-Maryland game should be the title favorite. So that was obviously a tough contest. Then they go against Denver. They had to get the 2015 Demons out of the way. They had to best Baptiste. They did that. And then they had a quick turnaround and beat Ohio State. That's an exceptional run. You know, those three teams are just exceptional teams from this year. Maryland is truly a worthy champion. And I think, you know, when you look back on their body of work, you know, this Maryland team, I don't know if they're necessarily better than the team last year, because last year's team was so good and so deep, but this team got it done. And you look at their body of work, their three losses, all by one goal. So even when you say, hey, you know, we have three losses, but you know, we never got blown out. We were never not in the game. Like even the Villanova game, you know, they got taken to it in the first half and they made a tremendous comeback and were right there to steal that game at the end. It just, the ball did not bounce their way that day. So obviously, I think Maryland, their legacy will be, you know, finally breaking that 42-year drought. But if you go back and reverse the 2015 and 2016 title games, you know, we're looking at a three straight champion. That's one of the better dynasties in modern lacrosse. Of course, that's a huge what if, but still.
I mean, that didn't happen. But yeah, I think there's an alternate reality where it happened and you're bored with this championship and you're like, don't care about them winning. You know what I mean? I feel like this is like their fourth and you're like, yeah, it's fun. You know, whatever, you're bored with it. This team did not have an easy road. So if you think that they got like handed something or like they didn't deserve this win, like you are crazy. Cause they beat phenomenal teams. They had one of the toughest schedules, if not the toughest schedule all season long. This was a grind of a year for everyone. I don't think any team was ever a favorite for anything. Do you know what I mean? Everybody mm-hmm. had an Achilles heel. Everybody had a weakness, and everybody had a different style that worked for them. But the matchup against a different team is what defeated them. And I feel like the legacy of this Maryland team maybe is more that they're so well coached and able to adapt to situations better than, you know, most schools and programs are able to do.
Yeah.
You know, they recruit great players and they don't put them in systems. They teach them a way to play. That's different. That's also very hard because if they're coming from a school, let's say they're coming from a high school that's a crazy, like, fly by the seat of your pants offense where that guy, they recruited an attackman, and that guy was able to do whatever he wanted. There's no one at Maryland that's able to do whatever they want. Yeah. And to get, you know, not to be like, I'm an old man, get off my lawn, but to get this generation of players to buy in to that system is harder than it's ever been for coaches. So I think the lion's share of the praise should go to Tillman and his staff. And also to, I mean, not to take anything away from the players, but this was a way to coach and a way to play the game that got you to the championship game 3 years in a row. And that's not anything to just like turn your shoulder on. That's a huge part of this. And this in many ways, this championship is the culmination of that hard work to change the way that players play. I personally don't like that. I think players should play however they want and put them in a system that caters to them. But all that being said, there's another guy who gets players and has them conform to his system, and he wins a lot of championships, and you played in his house, and you won. So I feel like that's a great Bill Belichick, if you're missing that reference, folks. I feel like that is actually more apt than maybe people are giving it credit for. So from one New Englander to one Marylander, you know, I'm impressed. Even if you didn't do it the way I would want to see it done, you still did it. And you did it however you wanted to do it. You did it your way. And that's the best praise I can offer. You know, great coaching, great adjustments, great players, all in the same place, converging for a championship is what the sport's all about. And we can talk about shot clocks and all that stuff later. But at the end of the day, no one's going to take that away from the Terps. So great job. This is the year we ended curses. Can I get one chirp in, not to Maryland? I want to get a chirp in to the editorial staff because I told you this was the year of curses ending with the Cubs and the Cavs and all that stuff. And we should have done a curse issue, and we didn't. I want you to remember that. It's on video. It's on tape. Someone was taping that meeting. Should have been done.
Quick aside before we move on. Yeah, I had a friend who I went to Maryland with who texted me during the game. It was like, is Maryland lacrosse about to get the dub? And I just texted, you know what I texted him back?
What?
Bruh.
Yeah.
Because I was so nervous. But then I texted him after. I was like, yeah, man, we got the dub. And he asked me, he was like, is this the first one? And I said, no, this is our first one in 42 years. We're basically the Cubs / Red Sox of college lacrosse. So this is a huge victory for them because we're able to reverse the curse, as you know, Boston people would say, and finally get it done.
Yeah.
All right, Kyle. Kind of leads us into our next segment, Towerton Watch. I'll say this. We came into this tournament thinking that Connor Fields had it locked up. But I honestly think now, after the way the postseason has played out, might be one of the more open races we've had in a few years. I mean, every year kind of seems to have one guy stack up more than the rest. I mean, last year, going into the Tourton ceremony, Dylan Malloy felt like a no-brainer. And of course, you had Lyle, and then Lyle and Mile that one year, co-winners. Those guys were no-brainers. Pinnell in 13 was a no-brainer. Baum in 12, it kind of came down between him and Manny, kind of felt like. Stanwyck might be the last time it was this open in 2011. And I really do think it's going to come down to Rambo versus Fields. I think Baptiste's candidacy took a dive in the semifinal loss with the way he performed. Rambo got the natty. He had a quiet Final Four weekend, I will admit that. But right now, I think you got to give him the slight edge over Fields. Then it would be Baptiste. Could we get another co-winner is what I'm really thinking going into this Tourton ceremony on Thursday.
You know, we were talking about this in the press box after the game. I think Rambo outdueling Fields in the playoff game put him over the edge a little bit. But at the same time, like, I would be okay with a co-winner. I still love Connor Fields' game. I think the story – I mean, not that we're jumping ahead, but sometimes we jump ahead. I think the storyline of next season is Reeves versus Fields versus Baptiste for, like, the senior supremacy of college lacrosse. And I think Fields is poised to be the best player we have seen in a very long time.
Yeah.
I mean, he was close to breaking Lyle's record. He wasn't that far off, and he still has way more points. And I feel like you have to acknowledge that. Maryland plays tougher opponents, and Rambo won the championship game. Andy beat him in the head-to-head the last time they played against each other. So I feel like it's probably going to Rambo. I really do. But I would be okay with a co-winner, and I'd be okay with Fields losing because he's got another year.
Yeah, this is going to be an interesting kind of precedent set if Rambo does win, because it kind of says that postseason, one again, we reinforcing that postseason play really does matter with this vote. Two, stats don't exactly matter because I feel like every player's stats are relative. I mean, you could say, you know, Nick, you know, Connor Fields had such a tremendous scoring season, but he didn't do it against, you know, quality opponents week in and week out. You can definitely say that about Matt Rambo because the Terps had the number one strength of schedule throughout the year. And also, I think it'll set a precedent that says, hey, so much of his overall career comes into this. So it would be a pretty interesting result if Matt Rambo won the Tourton.
Yeah, and I think another point that was brought up while we were talking about it in the press box is, you know, is Matt Rambo never went off for like 10 points against someone. And it's funny because you think of that as a negative, right? But also, I mean, you think of that as a positive, but you can look at that negatively as well, which is like, why didn't you drop like 12 points on St. Joe's? Like, why didn't you do that? You could have easily done that, and you didn't do it. And part of that is, again, going back to Maryland plays in a system the way that they're supposed to play, and it's not going to correlate to a ton of points for one player. That's just it's the team philosophy, and that's probably why that didn't happen. But I still feel like, not just winning the national championship, I feel like beating Fields in the one-on-one matchup point-wise when they played against each other, even though they're not playing against each other, they're on opposite sides of the field, I think that just gives them the edge. And the national championship's a nice little cherry on top of the sundae.
Yeah, and speaking of Matt Rambo, that leads us right into our next segment, everybody's favorite, Weird Watch of the Week. This is so meta, Kyle, but my Weird Watch of the Week is my post-game interview with Matt Rambo. When I don't even really remember it too well, but I don't even think I was that excited, but I just could not piece together a proper sentence to ask Matt Rambo about his emotions after the game. I'm basically like, Matt, like 42 years of alumni, they're in the stands like crying, and what does it mean to be in College Park past 42 years and win it for them?
Don't worry, I'm sure no one noticed. You choked a little under the pressure, but it was an emotional time for you. I can't say that about your Terps ever again. They did not choke under the pressure. And I wanted to just give out a final shout out. Congrats to all of Maryland Nation. You're welcome for the motivation. It was an honor to be played in your locker room.
Yes.
It was.
But I 100% own that Matt Rambo interview. We put it up on Instagram, and I had kids from my neighborhood like, yo, Dan, like, who's more hyped up, you or Rambo?
I would delete that. You know we can delete those.
I was also interviewing offensive coordinator J.L. Reppert after the game, and I referred to him as J.R. in the interview, and I realized my mistake as soon as I said it, and my eyes like went wide looking at him, and I was like, damn it, just keep going. Just keep going. So, you know, JL, sorry about that. You know, I realize I'm a mistake in the moment. Dan Amer did not come through in the clutch in the post game, man.
It's tough out here. Tough out here for Dan Amer. But you get the last laugh, man. You win. Your team won. Your boys won. I know it was a lot of hugging. I'm surprised you weren't showered with, like, a beverage or two on your way out. But, you know, Maryland did it for you, man. How do you feel? How do you really feel? Like, tell everyone how you really feel.
Like I said, it didn't really sink in yesterday, but this morning it kind of sunk in. You know, it was kind of like you needed to sleep on it to make sure it wasn't a dream. So it's kind of finally starting to sink in this morning. Just really happy. Like, you know, I had a lot of people text me and, like, say, hey, like, we know you've been a part of this program, you know, been around the program, not a part of it, for such a long time. I've been to every, you know, game since 2011, national championship game, in which they've lost. And just after the game, it kind of just felt like relief. Like, you know what? We finally got it done. Like, I feel like it felt better that we didn't lose rather than we won. But I think right now, looking forward, is the celebratory period. It's going to be a long summer of celebrating. I'm sure those guys are going to go back in the fall to College Park and be just like, you know what, we did it. We did it. We don't have, you know, Rambo, Heacock, and all that big senior class, so we got to go back to work to get it done. But this championship's going to be soaked up for a long time.
Are the Terps we just got our votes in for the final media poll. Are they number one next year?
Number one next year? I'd be hesitant to put them number one, but I do think they will be up there, whether maybe two or three. I think my number one team going into next year is going to be Albany, actually. Wow. I was thinking about it on the way to work. You got Connor Fields, arguably the best player in the nation, still playing. You got a faceoff guy who won close to 75% on the year. And then you got a young stud in Tohoka Nanakote come to join your team, basically going to create a dual threat at attack for the Danes. And I feel like with the way that they win faceoffs and the way that they've been recruiting, that they've become such a better defensive team that I think that Albany could take that next step and finally get to the Final Four next year, hopefully compete for a title. And of course, like we mentioned on, I believe, last week's podcast, the only direction is up when Scott Maher is coaching in the Capital District. But of course, we don't know if he's going to be coaching there next year. He is a hot commodity.
He is a very hot commodity, but I don't know how you walk away from that group of players. You also, I would be remiss to forget to mention JD Colarusso, who had a phenomenal first year between the sticks for Albany as well. Yeah, I mean, my thought process never changes season to off season. You win the belt, you hold the belt until you drop too many matches, and then it's out. So I feel like Maryland's got the belt for a long time here. We'll see what happens in the off season. But are we bringing this in for a landing? We finishing up? Are you getting choked up now? The pod's over? I'm getting a little choked up. I'm a little sad.
I'm a little sad. I mean, we kind of think about where we started our first our first podcast was back in December. The main subject of conversation was Rogue One, which is now on DVD and digital. So we talked about that. I gave you my preseason top 20 where I said Maryland was the number one team.
You did. I also, during that podcast, sorry to interrupt you, you asked me if I could see any other team in the Final Four besides Maryland more likely to be in the Final Four. And what did I say?
You said no.
I said no. I said they would be in the Final Four. So, you can take one of my sound bites. You must absorb the rest and know what they mean. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, man, it's been a journey. We've gotten better as we've gone along, I think. I think we're having a lot of fun here. You know, unfortunately, we spent too much time on Star Wars, and they're like, maybe don't nerd out so hard on the podcast during the season, guys. And we're like, okay, we'll make a segment. So that turned into Weird Watch of the Week. Dan did a great job producing this. Guys, I'm just like the loudmouth dude that pops on and gives his thoughts and perspectives. But Dan comes up with the rundown. I do my edits and then we go. You know, it's been a great experience, stressful experience at times. But, you know, I want to thank everyone for listening, all of your takes. You know, I've gotten a lot of, you know, private messages and Twitter mentions, and even someone tagged me last night in an Instagram thing that called me a Maryland hater. So that was pretty cool. I have no idea who you are, but like tried to send me a message about it. I'm like, okay. I think that's great. You know, it's great to move the sport forward and have, you know, discussions with people from different perspectives. We're going to do this next year. We're going to have some more interviews for you guys and we're going to kind of change it around a little bit. But I feel like the only reason it's been a success is because you guys have listened. So, you know, thank you for listening and supporting us as much as you can. And we will see you soon.
Yeah, shout out to everybody who listened, particularly if you stuck with us all the way back since December. But, you know, we were really hyped to be the Monday reaction podcast. And I also think, you know, we are the one podcast during the three main Division I podcasts during the week that doesn't have, you know, a big ESPN broadcaster as one of the guys, you know, hosting the show. So we're kind of just like two regular guys kind of doing this, and we really appreciated being the guys, the first ones to kind of give their reaction on the weekend. It was always such a fun opportunity to kind of watch games on Sunday, come up with the rundown, and then Kyle to come in on Monday be like, I hate this rundown.
I mean, I don't know what you're talking about. I'm a fucking beast. So I don't know why you're saying that.
But yeah, there's like there's so many people I want to thank, and I want to thank the listeners first. Guys like Anish, Paul, Barcel Jordy, who came on the show. Of course, everybody at IL who support us and listen to our podcast, and you know, all those people who have given us feedback and kind of just interacted with us on Twitter, whether it be private message or maybe they sent us an email and gave us feedback. We always really appreciate that. So just thank you if you listened. And Kyle will be doing the MLL podcast with Chris Rosenthal throughout the summer. I may you know, come on for a few guest spots, maybe even try to get a niche on, and we'll talk. We'll have a Game of Thrones roundtable. I think that would be fun.
Yeah, definitely.
But you know, I can't thank everybody who listened enough, so I'm gonna just close my mouth, get it over with. Once again, we appreciate the listen, everybody. You can find me on Twitter at DanAburn2423. Kyle, take it away.
You can find me on Twitter at TheKyleDevitt. Hit me up with whatever you got to say. I might listen. Thanks for coming on. Thanks for plugging us in, letting us into your house, your car, your headphones, whatever. We appreciate it, and have a great summer, everybody.
Inside the Cross Podcast.